Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Always the basics, the importance of hitting recording.
Yes.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Between Two Chairs. This is a very special episode. And with me, as always, is the very angelic looking Jennifer Wollman. Jennifer, say hi.
Hi, everybody. And the reason he says that is because for those of you who can't see, since this is mostly audio, the ring light reflects in a picture over my head. So it always looks like I have a halo over my head. So anyway, so today is a super, super special episode. Not only is it our 100th episode, but we also have with us Tim Weishire. He is broker of Dream Builders Realty, a full service brokerage in Central Florida. He is also the principal broker and land use specialist of DBR Commercial. He serves as the chair of the Greater Orlando Aviation Authority, a board overseeing the operations for Orlando International Airport and Orlando Executive Airport. And he's 2025 chairman of the board for the Osceola Chamber of Commerce. Oh, and I almost forgot. He's also the 2025
You're
president
fired.
2025 president, that was all planned, of Florida Realtors that has over 238 members, which since we're selling...
No, 238,000 members.
Sorry, 238,000 members. Yeah, we've grown a bit since 238. I just wanted to see if you were paying attention.
Sure.
238,000 members, which are basically 238,000 small businesses. So since it's Small Business Month, we couldn't think of anybody better to have for Small Business Month as well as our 100th episode. He is an amazing person, as you can tell from all of the position he holds. And he is the epitome of a servant leader. And we're lucky to call him friend. So welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think you missed one of the more important things, which is Avanti Way Realty in Orlando and all the great work that we're going to be doing to expand Avanti in Orlando. So aside from the other things I get to do and I'm blessed to be a part of, I'm really excited about what's going to happen in Central Florida with Avanti Way Realty.
Yes, thank you for adding that. Are there any others that I missed? Because I'm so impressed with all the different roles that you have. And I know we're going to speak about how they're kind of all interconnected. But did I miss anything else? I did. I forgot Avanti.
You did, but it's not really important. I own a development company, Blue 7 Capital Partners, and a consulting firm, Strategic Advantage Consulting. We're actually helping consult with small businesses and large corporations and governments around the country. And certainly across the globe, helping them understand how to build more effective businesses, organizations, leadership development, strategic planning, things like that. But most importantly, I'm here to talk to you guys about business and opportunity. So I'm glad to be with you.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining. So tell us a little bit first about yourself. Where are you from? A little bit of your background, how you got involved in so many different aspects of not just real estate, but government and leadership.
Yeah. So I was originally born Long Island, New York. My parents moved down to Central Florida when I was 11 years old. And so Central Florida is really home for me. That's what I know. Although I have roots back on Long Island, I know Florida 100 times better than I know any other part of the world, let alone the country. Grew up right here in Central Florida. Always knew I was going to be in business. Even when I was a little kid, everyone in my family would say, this guy's going in business. It's just clear that I was wired for that. In high school is probably the time where I started really leaning into the idea of real estate and that real estate may be the lane that I would pick. There's a couple stories I normally tell, won't bore you guys with because I talk about them a lot, but that really marked me about the impact and importance of real estate and what it can do for families, communities, individuals, businesses, or otherwise. And so that kind of really helped define that pathway for me of what area of business would I go into. And then as far as the roles that I have the honor of serving on, you know, for me, and thank you for your words about being a servant leader, for me, that's it. Like, I clearly know my purpose in life. I was fortunate enough to understand, you know, who I am, what I was created to be, and what I've been called to do. And so all the pieces and parts that you hear, whether it's school board or realtors or chamber or airport or anything like that, it really comes back to me just really living out and fulfilling my ultimate purpose, which is to create good in the world, to point others to God, and to hopefully reflect Him in the way that I think, the way I operate, and in the decisions that I make. And then I truly believe in this nation, and I believe in the importance of small business and entrepreneurship. I believe it really is one of those very unique things in our nation that so often people take for granted. And so for me, it just further is an extension of my life. I'll tell you, this is a story. I had dinner with two of my best friends last night that happened to be in town from Colorado. And Scott asked me, he said, hey, what motivates you the most with all the things that you're involved in? So this literal conversation from last night. And I said, you know, the greatest thing for me is getting to speak into other people, getting to teach and guide and shape people and help point them in a direction of greater effectiveness. And at dinner, he smiled and laughed and he goes, you know what? He said, in the 30 years I've known you, he said, I love that that's still true. He said, because that's how I first met you, was I was mentoring him. And he looks, and he's older than me. He's like 4 or 5 years older than me. And he said, I've just seen that consistent in your life and how much you get lit on fire by the idea of helping other people succeed as opposed to just succeeding yourself.
I love that. And I think that's true. And you're a wonderful teacher. You speak so eloquently. I just love how when you get up, your passion shows in everything you do. And I think the fact that you're very, very clear on your purpose in life allows you to be super, super clear on your messaging. So tell me a little bit about, because even though we might have heard the stories about why real estate and what you do, our listeners, for the most part, haven't. So can you tell us that story?
Yeah, so there's two that I tell in a very abridged version. One is that on Long Island, New York, when I was a little kid, my next door neighbor, my parents' next door neighbor, owned a bunch of rental properties across Long Island. And he used to bring home things from these rental properties as they were transitioning tenants out, including, you know, bats and balls and mitts and gloves and arcade games. I mean, you name it, anything that people leave in a rental home when they were leaving that he saw a value, and he would bring it back and give it to the neighborhood kids. And so I remember asking my father, I said, how does he have all this stuff? Like, where does all this come from? And my dad was telling me, well, he owns properties and people pay him to live in him. And I'm like, I remember I moved here when I was 11. So I'm like 7 to 11 years old in this range where this is starting to really imprint on me. And I remember saying to my dad, I'm like, wait a second. So he buys houses, he doesn't live in him, and other people give him money to let, so he can let them live in those homes. And my dad said, yeah, that's pretty much what it is. And I thought, that's really cool. Why don't we do that? Like, that just was as a young kid. I've always been entrepreneurial minded, so my brain immediately went there. The second story is that when my parents were selling their home in New York and moving here, I was, I guess, maybe smart enough or tuned in enough to ask the right questions. And my dad was kind enough to give me the honest answers, which was they had bought their home on Long Island in the early 1970s. They lived in it for 12 years. And they sold it for about, I think their number was, I think they bought it for like $37,000 and they sold it for like $280,000 or something like that. And because of that equity growth, they were able to bring their family to Florida, which they thought would be a better lifestyle for us. They were able to build a brand new home, a bigger home with a bigger pool with all the things, buy two new cars. My dad used the money to help set up his small business. And my dad told me that story. And I said, so wait a second, you mean the house that we lived in and we created all these great family memories in, we played in the backyard and we did all these things, you were also making money on at the same time? And he said, yeah. And so he gave me the numbers and gave me everything. And I remember sitting at his desk in his office area and having that conversation. And now remember, at this point, I'm only 11 or 12 years old. And I just remember distinctly those two things and those two conversations and me having this light bulb go off about, wow, real estate is so much more than just a home. It's also a wealth builder. It's also a gateway to economic growth for individuals. And I saw what it did firsthand for my family, very working class family. My dad cut grass for a living. My mom was in education. We didn't come from money, wealth, business, or affluence. We came from hard work, sacrifice, and discipline. And real estate was the gateway that ultimately my parents were in their early to mid 30s and completely debt free at that point and never incurred debt for the rest of their lives and still remain debt free to this day. And that was all because of the power of home ownership and making prudent investments and being disciplined with their money.
Wow.
That's awesome. Another mic drop. Tim, so, you know, you and I have always spoken about the holistic approach of, or the interconnectivity of all things in real estate. And, you know, you told us a story one time that really drives that point. And that is that I think either in your capacity in the airport or in your advocacy, that you got a call from someone that was against the development. And you kind of connected the dots because, you know, I think that we live in a world where people get very entrenched into their niche and they focus on those things, which are important. Focus is important. But it's also important to not lose the interconnectivity between residential, commercial real estate, and what happens with civic institutions. So I would love if you would tell that story.
Yeah, so the story, and thank you, Fernando, I do remember it well, and I have told it a number of times. So I think it really helps make the point that you're wanting to make and I like making for people, which is that there was 26 acres on a major highway right in the middle of town that we were putting on the market to sell. And I got a call from somebody in the community and said, I see that you're selling this property. Please tell me you're not developing any more residential units on it. And I said, well, it's a hard corner with a signal on a major highway. Like, we've been waiting for FDOT to expand roadways and all that. So, no, this is a commercial play more than anything. And I said, but why are you asking that? Like, why are you so against more residential development? And the individual, as a female, said, well, the traffic is terrible and we don't have the right infrastructure. The last thing we need are more homes coming in the community. And I said, I understand, like, you know, I live in the community too. I drive in the same roads you do. And I said, but just so you know, I said, it's not likely to be residential. It's likely to be commercial, maybe mixed use of some sort. And I said, that's really probably the highest and best use, but we'll see. And then she said, well, good. I'm really glad it's going to be commercial. By the way, can you get Super Target to buy the property? I'd love to have a Super Target in our community. And of course, I laughed and said, I'd love for Super Target to buy this property as well. Who wouldn't? And by the way, I'm a big Super Target fan. So why wouldn't I want it for that reason, too? And I said, well, here's what's interesting. I said, number one, I don't think Super Target's going to buy the property. I said, number two, I said, if Super Target were to, and it could be any retailer for this matter, if they were to come in the market, just so you know, the only reason they would come is if there's enough rooftops. And by the way, you're not going to get Super Target without more homes. That's a simple fact. So you don't want more homes, but you want a Super Target. So let me just tell you, if you continue to complain about new home construction, you're not going to get the commercial development you want. It's simple math. But beyond that, you're complaining about the infrastructure, and the infrastructure cannot be built and cannot keep up with the demand based on residential construction only. The tax output and the fee output that's generated, whether it be impact fees, ad valorem taxes, or otherwise, are not high enough to actually create the revenue that the county in this case needs to build the road infrastructure, roads, utilities, otherwise to do it. And so that story really comes together with the idea of me getting her to understand that in order to solve the transportation concerns you have, you need commercial. And in order to get commercial, you need residential. And if you want to solve one, you can't eliminate the other. They're all very symbiotic. And once you understand that real estate is all interconnected and that you can't eliminate one side of the market while creating a truly viable other side of the market, you have to understand that you need to create balance in that to where you're bringing in residential development, commercial development, interconnectivity, smart growth and infrastructure to tie it all together. And that is the story that I often tell to people to get them to understand. When we say as Florida realtors, we're the voice for real estate in Florida, and you guys have heard me say this, we're the voice for all real estate in Florida. That's residential, commercial, development, investment, appraisal, property management, and, you know, you name it, all of it, and they're all interconnected.
Tim, I'm curious because, you know, part of what we aim to do with this podcast is to demystify commercial real estate and break it down to its simplest forms. But, you know, at the core of whether you're residential or commercial is location. Location is paramount, right? And you know, there's a reason why that is always the top three words in real estate. I'm wondering, when you're looking at a market, and especially in your travels, not only throughout the country and internationally, but throughout the state of Florida, and as you've gone through these leadership ranks, you've gotten to know new markets, you've gotten to familiarize yourself. tell our audience of agents, brokers out there, when you're looking at a market and you're trying to kind of size it up, if you will, are you looking at demographics first? Are you looking at economic engines, or, you know, what are the indicators that you look for to really evaluate the health of the market or the future trend of the market? Especially you wear so many hats, and as a developer, you also look at those factors.
Yeah, so great question, and thank you. I would start with this. The first thing is you have to have a business-friendly community. You have to have a business-friendly landscape. And if you have a government body or government bodies that are too onerous and restrictive and allowing growth and development to take place, or creating too many barriers of entry or too much red tape for people to cut through to be able to open, start, and succeed in their business, that's number one. The tax structure within the area is really key. Beyond that, it really comes down to jobs and growth. One of the things that I've said many times is people right now are talking a lot about the inventory levels that we have and the lack of inventory there to meet the actual demand in the general marketplace across the United States and certainly within the state of Florida. Well, I say, listen, it's home prices aren't going to come down, so that's not going to happen. Interest rates aren't going to come down enough to where it's going to really move the needle. Operating costs of your home, whether it be property taxes, homeowners insurance, or otherwise, that's not really going down. Some people would say, well, we need more down payment and more down payment assistance. Well, that doesn't solve the problem. And so as I talk through those things, I just named four. And I always say the fifth one is what you really need is solid wage growth. When you look at home prices and you look at the cost of goods and services and you compare that to wage growth over time, wages have been stagnant. Well, they've been stagnant, some would argue, because businesses don't want to pay employees more. That's not accurate at all. Businesses are more than happy to pay anyone anything as long as the value is justified in the return that's derived from the for the company. I tell everyone that we hire, I have no problem. I'll pay you any salary you want. You just need to make at least five times what I pay you as a net bottom line to the company, and then it can be justified. It's simple math. So the key component then becomes, do you have adequate wages in the marketplace? And I say that to answer your question about looking at commercial development. If you look at where the jobs are going and you look at where the energy and the synergy within the market is moving in an economic standpoint, then you start following the trend to say, okay, there's going to be residential or commercial, or let's just say real estate opportunities that'll come in the marketplace too. And the minute that government starts to understand and begins to set policy around the fact that they're not there to control business, they're there to empower business growth and business opportunity, that becomes the game changer for every single community across the country, around the world, but certainly in the state of Florida for our case. So we're always looking at where the job's going, where's the momentum going. That's also then where's the infrastructure. New roads are coming in, new utilities are being put in. There's a lot of expansion in a certain market. Well, we want to start looking out that way. And then obviously you're doing an analysis to say, well, what are the gaps in the marketplace? You know, if there's already five self-storage facilities, well, we don't want to build one. Right. If there's already 10, you know, warehouse facilities, maybe we don't want to build one. If there's 30 multifamily projects, maybe we don't. So you're looking at that gap analysis and then looking to say, does the economy and the marketplace truly support that opportunity?
So give us some insights. You're in one of the fastest growing areas of the state in Central Florida. Give us some insights. What are you seeing? What are some of the challenges? I know the Brightline, at least for those of us who commute back and forth between Miami and Orlando frequently, was a lifesaver and a game changer, and we saw the growth up and down the corridor. What are you seeing in your area and your market? What's working? What still needs to be tweaked and worked on in terms of business creation, development, that interconnectivity kind of roadmap that you were describing?
Sure. So the first thing I'll say, and I'll relate it to real estate, is we have to get away from the not in my backyard mindset. And so it's really about getting local governments to understand that private property rights are important and they're pure and they need to be protected. And it's always interesting to me, where I grew up in Central Florida originally was cattle and citrus. And now it's just all residential. And any new residential that's wanting to be built, even sometimes commercial. I mean, I was going to develop a bank and a daycare on a hard 6-acre corner on a major thoroughfare. And people came out to say, this can't happen. We can't have this built here. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So my point being is that I always find it interesting that people argue about new growth coming in, and yet they live in the new growth of yesterday. And I'm like, well, listen, you guys don't like any growth, but guess what? You're the one that moved into my community 25 years ago, and you now live on the old citrus grove that we used to hang out on or ranch on or spend time together on, whatever it may be. So the first thing is making sure that we get away from the idea that we want onerous restrictions around land use, zoning, and development to create opportunity. That's Central Florida, but that's the whole state. Beyond that, it really becomes being able to really think intelligently about what growth really should look like. And there are counties and cities that have done a good job in this regard, where they've really looked at smart growth and urban sprawl and how do they make sure that they're not deploying resources, whether it's schools or fire, safety, police, or otherwise, out into outlying areas just to meet the need of one ancillary development that's coming online 6 miles away from all population centers. So there's that. We need to continue to work on that. I will tell you, though, you're right. I do live in one of the fastest growing parts of the entire nation, not just the state. And the things that we're excited about are really what we're doing in innovation. And I know that's kind of a buzzword for me this year, so I don't mean it in that regard, but I mean it to the extent we have NeoCity, which is a high tech sensor research facility that's at the leading edge of nanotechnology and what's taking with chip development. And that chip development is taking place in your phone, on the computers we're talking on now, in our cars, and all those type of things. Then you go over to the Space Coast of Florida. Last night, we watched the Falcon Heavy take off, right? And you think about the number of launches that are taking place there and everything that's happening up and down the Space Coast to bring new industry and new opportunity in. Now, the reason I mention those is because I'm actually building a triangle for you. Now you go back going west, going back into Orlando, the Greater Orlando Aviation Authority, where we sit with 12,000 acres, where we sit as a $43 billion economic engine to Central Florida with an encatchment area, meaning the people that actually use our airport span almost the entire state. Miami is an exclusion because you have your own. Jacksonville actually still comes down to ours a lot of times. Tampa comes to ours if people want to fly out because of the connections we have, with over 160 direct connections around the world. So when you start to draw that triangle, what you realize is NeoCity in Osceola County, Medical City, where I live in Lake Nona, which is right outside of the Greater Orlando Aviation Authority and MCO, the International Airport, which is just south of downtown Orlando, the major metro market, and then connecting east along the 528 or the Brightline Rail, if you will, out into the Space Coast, and what's happening with the port out there, you start talking about a ton of high-tech development. So in our area, most of our leaders are really focused on what are we doing to build that third leg of our economic stool. We've always had agriculture and we've always had tourism. And it was agriculture until the 1970s when Disney came in and completely changed the landscape of Central Florida and made it the tourism mecca of the entire world. Well, now for the last decade and a half, myself and other leaders have been saying, well, what's the third leg of this economic engine? Give an example that you guys know well. Miami has leaned heavily into the financial services sector, and you guys are attracting a ton of capital in Miami and trying to identify yourselves as the next financial epicenter of the United States, if not the world. That's great. We believe technology, innovation, and everything that's going to happen in that space is a Central Florida play. And so I'm leaning heavily into that. And a lot of the conversations that I'm having to say, let's attract those jobs and those opportunities here. And then let's make sure we're allowing land use and development that's going to create the right type of community. And I'll end on this. I obviously like where I live. I've chosen to buy a home here, build here, live here, and spend time here. But Lake Nona, I think, is just a great example of a community that gets it right. And I know you've both been here and you've seen it. You think about it, you have multi-million dollar homes sitting right next to $400,000 and $500,000 condos and townhomes, which are right next to village homes that are $400,000 to $800,000, which are right next to apartments, which are right next to, there's sidewalk, there's trails, there's connection, there's multiple hospitals, there's research development, there's corporation headquarters here. When you start thinking about people saying they don't want density in communities, but then they look at a community like Celebration, Florida or Lake Nona and they get it right, I think people are making the wrong argument. You do want density and you want a diverse product type within a community or in order to create a strong economic viable place. And here's where I'll end on this. One of the reasons that Lake Nona is so successful is they understood that they weren't just creating a housing community. They were creating an economic center. And so they are bringing jobs and corporate headquarters and innovation and technology and life sciences and all these things into the community. And there are enough jobs to support the new housing markets that are housing products that are coming on the market. and there's enough housing to support the opportunities of employees that are coming into work at these jobs and employment centers. That's when you do it right. And that's how we need to be thinking about economic development across the state and across the country.
So I think you brought up a really interesting point with the Lake Nona example. And I want to ask you, was that developed as a 15-minute city conscientiously? Because to your point, I think people don't want density, because when they think of density, they think of downtown Manhattan. They don't think of the diversification of different types of real estate within a dense area. So do you know if it was designed as a 15-minute city, or is it just kind of happening organically through their original plan?
Yeah, it's not happening organically. It was very intentional. And what you want to know is that Lake Nona immediately abuts the Greater Orlando Aviation Authority. Our acreage and their acreage butt up to one another. And what they knew early on, remember when they first bought Lake Nona, they bought the country club and that was it. And then they continued to buy all the land around it. And then they said, well, what do we do with this? And how do we make sure it's going to be successful, which has been tremendously successful, and beyond that, grow in the right way. And so the relationship between what we would call an aerotropolis generically, which is you have a major airport and then all of the residential surrounding it and the jobs that create an entire ecosystem of connectivity, that was very intentional by design. And it's still intentional today. I just had a meeting within the last month with Beep, which is an autonomous vehicle company right here in Lake Nona. And they have projects all over the place in Jacksonville and otherwise out west in Florida, South Florida, but they're based here. And we're looking at autonomous vehicles and interconnectivity and how do you start to create the right type of connections between where someone like me or you or anyone else may live and ultimately where they need to get for work, where they want to go to shop and eat and play and entertain, and where they want to go to travel. And so it was intentionally designed this way is the answer.
Well, and I think another really important part about Lake Nona, and again, Fernando and I, when we travel throughout the state, we'll see something. We're like, oh my gosh, that's like book perfect zoning, right? And Lake Nona is an example of that. But my favorite part, and I think what made it so successful, is having that common area center where you have the restaurants around the lake on one side, you have a park, you have a play area, you have sculptures, and it's just a nice community gathering place, right? Because when you have density, sometimes you lose that community gathering and you just kind of run into each other when you're at a restaurant or at the library or at a store, whereas here there's an intentional space. Can you tell us a little bit about how the community engages that space?
Well, tremendously is the generic answer. That's where I was having dinner last night, was down in what you're referring to as town center. And when you're in town center, you run into your neighbors, you run into other business leaders and electeds, you run into kids running around with a soccer ball or throwing something around to play catch with one another. I mean, it really is pretty remarkable. And here's the thing, we're talking about Lake Nona as an example, but really what we're talking about is a smart design community. We're really talking about how do we, as leaders in the real estate space and in our respective markets as a whole, how do we help carry that message forward in a way that gets cities and counties and school districts and otherwise to understand, get out of the way of smart growth and development and instead empower it to happen? And let's give credit where credit's due. We sit within the incorporated area of the city of Orlando, and the city of Orlando has been very, very smart in how they've engaged in working with the developers in Lake Nona to create this entire community and ecosystem. But the truth of it is, Jennifer, to your question, is it's honestly, it's what community is supposed to be. I mean, you think about, like, even when I was growing up, even as a little kid on Long Island, like you literally went to your neighbor's home and you played in the street together and you hung out with one another. You were in the front yard. You were, you know, doing the old adage we say of going to get a cup of sugar or a cup of milk or whatever from one another. And community was truly community. And when you start looking at how do you build communities the way that we're talking about, what happens is all of a sudden neighbors are no longer in their backyard quarantined off to themselves, but they're in the front yard sitting on a front porch, or they're walking along the sidewalks. When I got done with dinner last night, I literally got home from dinner, came to the house, put on a pair of sneakers and went on a 45-minute walk around the community, just walking around at 9:30 at night. It's because it's safe. It's clean. There's sidewalks. There's connectivity. There's all those things. But let me say this too, because what we're talking about sounds beautiful, and it is, but it has to be financially sound. And so there are many times, even as a former elected official, where people would come to me and say, well, why don't you guys just do this or build this? And it's like, it doesn't make financial sense. And so my caution to your listeners would be, understand that when we talk about all of these assets within a community, it has to be done in a way that truly makes financial sense, or it's not going to work. And in our community, it makes sense. And so that's why we're the beneficiaries of it. We also pay for it, though, right? We pay elevated property taxes. We pay elevated home prices to live here. People are saving money to move here. But, you know, not everybody's maybe going to live in Lake Nona on day one. I didn't live in Lake Nona on day one. I bought a very small home, lived in it, sold it, made equity improvement, moved to another home, built a ranch, then sold that, and then moved here. But these are the type of things that we can create. And our population here, just so you know, spans the gamut. I mean, you've got college kids and, you know, senior citizens, and you've got diverse populations all the way across the board. So when you have a community like that, you create the true essence of community, is what I would say.
So Tim, you have built and continue to develop multiple businesses. And I know that in August, we have Florida Realtors has their annual conference. And our keynote speaker is Marcus Lemonis. And he often speaks about businesses need to be centered around the three P's, right? People, processes, and the product. And I'm wondering, from your mindset, how do you approach, you know, what is your philosophy on building a business? Are you consistent with that idea of those three P's? What do you prioritize over the other?
Yeah. So first of all, bringing in Marcus was incredibly important to me. If you know, we brought in Donald Miller in January. We've brought in great speakers for our CEO symposium and our chair vice chair training. I've been very intentional as the president of Florida Realtors to make sure that I'm bringing in people that are not just celebrities that we want to meet to meet, but people that can truly speak directly to the individual needs of our members. And Jennifer, in your introduction, you mentioned our almost 240,000 members, and you guys know that I say that's 240,000 small businesses. And so what I'm looking at is saying, how do I bring in the people that are going to speak into and support these small businesses so that they can continue to not survive, but thrive and grow and sustain and ultimately find something that they can monetize on their exit of their careers as well. The answer to your question, Fernando, is yes. I literally, when I finish up with you guys, I have a meeting with our chief relationship officer for our consulting firm to talk about, when you talk about people, right? I'm constantly investing not only in my people, but also investing in the people that work with me to invest in the people that we serve. And I truly believe that the minute you take your focus off of the important human resources that you have, and you also need to hold them accountable and give them the skills and the training and the support that they need. But that is a key piece. The second part to your idea about process and product, I'm a process guy. That's where I excel the most. That's why I'm hired by so many organizations and corporations to build strategic plans across the world, is because my mind naturally sees processes and everything. And I can look at things that are very disparate to most people and synthesize them in a way in my mind very quickly to go, well, this is what needs to happen. It's, you think it was 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's actually A, B, C, and D, right? And I know how to rebuild it mentally. So process is the key. And I would tell you, when you ask about my businesses, that's how I succeeded. I was fortunate to get into real estate at a very young age. And I was the youngest guy in my office. I mean, I'm like 19 years old or whatever, with 50-year-olds and older. But what I did is I outworked everybody and I outprocessed everybody. So I would come in an hour early. I would take a very, very, very short lunch at my desk. I would stay an hour late. If you compounded that, what it meant is that I worked 10 to 12 hours more per week than everyone else in the office. And then I would look at things and say, well, this is how I'm doing it, but it doesn't seem to make the most sense. And if I just do it this way and this way and this way instead, I can get there quicker. And that's what then ultimately brought me to the place of being able to, within like 3 or 4 months, becoming the top producer in my entire company, was because I just outworked people. I tried to think of new ways of innovating and creating pathways and processes. And then I constantly refined them. Our processes aren't perfect. I'm constantly refining what we do. And then as far as the product goes, look, you have to sell something that's of value. But beyond that, the reason that I brought in Donald Miller is you have to be able to articulate what that value is. I can think I have the greatest thing in the world, whether it's a product or service or otherwise. But if I don't know how to communicate to the marketplace the value that it provides to them and why they need it to remove some pain or enjoy some pleasure in their life, I can have the best kept secret, but I'm not going to be able to monetize it. And I would submit that there's a fourth P, which is profits. And that to me is the key thing. Nobody gets in the business just to feel good. It's business, it's enterprise, it's commerce for a reason. You get into it to make sure that you can build profits. And so for us, it's looking at people, process, product, and profits, and all of those always have to be in check. And then there's a human component that we use to say, we never want to put our profits and the opportunity for growth over our people, or let's say that our principles that support our people and define who we work with. And so we're constantly finding balance in all those things of knowing when to move forward and when to hold back. And for me, in every business that I have or have had, the key is discipline. Is I never want to grow faster than I'm capable of handling. Because the greatest thing that I'm selling in every company that I own or have an investment in is integrity. It's myself. It's the fact that we complete what we say we're going to do and we do it with excellence. And if we ever make a mistake, we own it and we say, no, we could have done better on this. We could have improved that. So what we realize is that we're always going to be grounded in who we are and make sure that we protect the integrity of what it is that we're selling or offering or providing for our customers, our clients, or our consumers.
I'm curious about something, and this is really pure curiosity. Is there a common thread people-wise, right, among your companies, or do they work in silos, or do you have, is there a connectivity between all the companies in regards to the people that run them?
Yeah, so there is. The first one is this. I always say I hire for character first and competency second. So I can teach people to learn skills as long as they have a certain amount of like competency and capacity, right? But I always hire for character first. So the first thing is that I'm always looking for people that I think truly embody the core principles or values that we uphold or I uphold as an individual, we uphold as a company. The second thing is that I get everyone the best that I can to understand that everyone is equally responsible for all parts of the company. And so we do not silo things out. We're very big on building culture. In fact, the core team that supports me, like my admins and EAs and COOs and all those people, they all work in one centralized office and it's an open workspace. It's not private. And that's not because I think that's the right answer. It's just the right answer for us and for them. It's the space that they wanted. We didn't have that space a handful of years ago. And they came to me and said, we really want this. And so we went in the marketplace and found it for them so that they can all work and collaborate with one another. So they all have their areas of responsibility and accountability, but they also understand that they're all equally responsible for the end result. So nobody gets to say, well, hey, sales are down. That's the sales department's fault. No, that's also marketing and that's also administration and that's also operations. Everyone's responsible because we're all working to one key intended outcome, which is productivity and profitability for whatever company it may be.
You know, I'm really curious because you're so well versed in so many things, right? And you've certainly, I think anybody who listens to you knows this is a person who's lived, if you know what that means. But I'm really curious, out of all of the roles that you have undertaken in your leadership journey, let's call it that, although I think for you, it's more of a life journey than to just diminish it into just a leadership journey. But is there anything that you feel is really out of your comfort zone, or that is scary is not the word, but is that where you find the most challenge?
No, I'm sure there is something, right? So I'll say this to answer this question first, is that I tell people that if there are 100 things that need to be done, I'm good at 10 and I'm better than everyone at those 10. And it's not because I'm cocky. It's because I'm either naturally gifted in them, I've studied them, I have experience in them, or I've worked really hard to excel in them. But what you really need to hear in that comment is the other side of it, which is I said there's 100, I'm good at 10. So there's 90 of them that I'm willing to admit to you I'm not good at, and you don't want to give those to me. And so in the business world, right, that's what every employer does. And I try to get people to understand this. Every employer hires people to free up their time, to make them money, and to keep them happy. And when you break it down that simple, people are like, what do you mean? That's not my job. I'm like, no, think about it. No company hires you to not make them money. Every company hires you because the CEO or the entrepreneur or whoever it is doesn't want to do that task or finds that their time is better spent doing another task. So you're freeing up their time for something else. And absolutely nobody wants to be around people that draw them down, drag them down, or create misery within their space, right? So we hire for our deficiencies and for our needs. And so for me, I don't think there's anything that scares me, Because what I look at is if I don't have the capacity, I'm just going to find a Fernando or I'm going to find a Jennifer and I'm going to bring them alongside of me and I'm going to empower them to support me to achieve what we need to. The other thing too, and this goes back to the very first question that we talked through, Jennifer, which is really knowing and understanding my purpose. I like every other human on earth. I want to be loved. I want to be liked. I want to have good relationships. But at the end of the day, what I need more than anything is to be able to look myself in the mirror and look my beautiful daughters in the eye and say, Dad's doing it right. I'm working hard. I'm making the right decisions. I'm sacrificing the right ways. I'm serving in the right ways. And when I get to the end of this, Fernando, this life journey that you mentioned, my goal is to hear well done, good and faithful servant, right? That I realize that I've had 50 or 60 or 80 or 100 years, whatever I'm blessed with on this earth. And I have to be able to get to the end of it and know that I've done it right. So there's nothing that scares me because I know what my purpose is. And the thing that people struggle with me sometimes, and right now is a great example. I have the unique opportunity to be the chairman of the chamber, the president of the realtors, and the chairman of the seventh largest and busiest airport in the nation, right? All at the same time. I didn't pick that. I didn't map that out and say, this is what I want. And I don't really pursue positions. And people don't always understand that because a lot of people do because their identity is wrapped up in their prominence or their positions. And once that position's gone, they feel like their identity is gone. For me, my purpose has always been wrapped up in the impact that I make in the lives of others. So I just so happen to be sitting today with three positions. Next year, I may be sitting with none. And I'm going to be just as content in 26 as I am in 25 because my purpose isn't my position. My purpose is my impact. So I'm really scared of nothing because I know that I don't pursue things that I don't think align with my greater calling. And as many things as you see me do right now, like I have these three important roles. What people don't know is how many other roles I say no to every single week of my life. And so it may seem like, well, he does a lot, but what you don't realize is that I say no to even more than I say yes to. And it's probably 20 to 1, maybe 50 to 1 for that matter.
Well, we're very glad that you said yes to this interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen, I love you guys. I respect you guys. You know that. And I'd spend as much time as I can. You guys are literally two of my favorite people in the state of Florida in real estate. And I'll say real estate just to make sure my chamber people don't get upset.
Yeah, there you go.
I love it.
So since, I think you wrapped up a lot of business. I mean, you've been seeing and probably hearing me clicking away, typing, our editor's going to hate me. But you have one of the reasons we love talking to you and we wanted to bring you on is you just have so many great nuggets of information that are so clear and to the point. With Florida Realtors and the almost 240,000 small businesses, I know, you know, it's a weird time in real estate. There are a lot of changes going on with tech, with AI, with rules, with regulations, with financing, et cetera. So for all of these small businesses, how would you recommend in your clear, succinct way that small businesses in real estate tackle this kind of very unsettling time? Because we know markets in general like stability. And I don't think the real estate market, you know, nationally in Florida, anywhere really is stable right now because of so many different things going on in the overall market. So what would your recommendation?
Sure. First, I would say this is that real estate is a business. It's not a hobby. And so if you're in the real estate profession and you're not truly a professional, this isn't what you do every day as a craft, that you're studying it, learning it, and growing in it, then maybe you're in the wrong profession, right? The second part of it is that then I want you to understand, let's say all 240,000 members are in the exact right place, and I hope they are. Then the next thing I would say is understand that you are a business and function like one. And a business doesn't wake up at 10 a.m. and it doesn't work 4 hours and it doesn't close at 2. A business runs and it runs efficiently and it's constantly improving its processes and systems, but it's also going to the earlier point is it knows its true value. I'm not worried about real estate. I've not been worried at all through any of this. And yes, I'm like everyone else. 2023 and 2024 revenue was not where any of us would want it to be. But we also understand that markets do fluctuate. And the demand for real estate is not going to go away. And we're fortunate because the demand for Florida real estate is certainly not going to go away. People have figured out that the three of us live in one of the best places on all of Earth. And they are flocking to our state because they like our government structure. They like our economy. They like our lifestyle. They like our 278 days or whatever it is of sunshine or 1,300 miles of coastline. So speaking to Florida realtors, I'd say, number one, make sure you really are an expert at real estate. Number two, make sure you're doing the things you need to do to grow as a business and thinking like a business. I'll take a detour for a second. People will, when I interview people that want to get into real estate, I'll say, well, why do you want to get in? And most people say one of two things. Either I like the commission, the money, the compensation, the earnings, the wages, whatever it is that I can make. And then they'll say, and I like the freedom and flexibility. And I say, well, just so you know, you get one or the other, not both. Because if you want to be successful in real estate, you give up a lot of flexibility and you have to work hours that other people don't know you're working. I was up this morning, which I wake up early anyway, 5 o'clock in the morning, right? And I'm starting to work and figure things out. I'm 4 hours into my day before most people are even waking up or finishing the first cup of coffee. So what I would tell all of our members, all of our 240,000 small businesses is think like a business. And ask yourself, do you know your real value? Because you're going to have to compete against a Jennifer or a Fernando in the marketplace at some point. And I can guarantee you, they know their value and they're studying every day to get better at what they're doing and to communicate their value to the marketplace. And you're about to go up against them. And so you better make sure you're working just as hard as they are to be the best of the best. The second thing is, this isn't a hobby and you can't just do it on the side. And the third thing is understand that if you do those two things and you do it right, you're in an industry that not only creates incredible opportunity for you professionally and personally, but it's an industry that makes a profound difference in the lives of individuals and families and communities. We are literally at the front edge of creating everything I told you about my family. We're at the front edge of creating that for millions and millions and millions of families across this nation. Real estate is a beautiful thing. And I don't say that because I happen to lead it right now or because I've invested almost 30 years of my career into it. All you have to do is take a step back and quickly realize that when you have a home and you own it and you create stability and you build wealth and you eliminate debt while increasing value through appreciation, and you do it in a stable environment where you can create either life or family or otherwise in a way that you're getting to enjoy the fruits of this beautiful nation and certainly this beautiful state, why not? So my closing remark on that, Jennifer, would be understand that the future is bright and it's going to continue to be bright. And people need us, people want us, and people will continue to call upon us to help them make the most important financial decision in their lives. And we just need to make sure that we're the true experts that are positioned well and know how to guide them in the most effective way. And do not take for granted the importance of what we do as realtors.
Awesome. That's mic drop. Ending. We're done. Cut. Print.
I love it.
Don't drop past the close. That's it.
That was exactly.
Well, we always teach our agents that when the answer is yes, you know, stop talking. So we're going to stop talking. But Tim, we just want to say thank you so much for sharing of your time and sharing all this amazing energy that you always give to everything that you do. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode, a very special episode. We can't believe we've gotten to do 100 of these. It is a labor of love for Jennifer and I, and we just, adore it. And we really appreciate everyone who comes up to us or sends us a note and gives us a little nod of acknowledgement. So I really, really appreciate that you're finding value in listening. So with that being said, we just want to say goodbye and we'll see you on the 101st episode. Jennifer, say bye.
Bye.
Well, I have a quick question. Should I be offended that you waited until number 100 to even invite me to come? Or should I be honored that you saved me for the 100th episode of this amazing Between Two Chairs podcast? So all joking aside, grateful to be with you.
Absolutely.
Definitely the latter. We wanted
world
to work out kinks. We wanted to make sure that we were professional enough, that we found our voice. So for the 100.
Let me express it in this way. In a world in which people often have a hard time with delayed gratification, we are of a certain age where we understand the value of that delayed gratification. So, yes, honored is the way that you should look at it.
Well, thank you. I am honored and I'm grateful. So thanks for letting me be with you guys today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you soon.